The field narrows to 9 in private bids to buy JEA. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connected. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, from JEA news to downtown development and more, it's a conversation with Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci. What are your questions? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, author Tim Gilmore on his new book, Channeling Anna Fletcher. That's later. But first this morning, it's a new effort to provide a boost to Jacksonville's plans for downtown revitalization and historic preservation. Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci is calling for replenishing a trust fund to this effort. We're going to talk about that and also the latest headlines about JEA. Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci, good to have you back on the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Thanks for being with us. And you can call the councilman right now. Call us up at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa N. Jacks. And our Facebook page is open. In a moment, Councilman Carlucci, we'll talk about your bill, which has several co-sponsors that would beef up the revitalization and preservation funds for downtown Jacksonville. That's an important discussion point. But first, I'd like to ask you your reaction to the news that JEA has picked 9 companies to negotiate with to buy the utility. This remains a controversial topic in this community. What do you see as the city council's role in responding to this latest development?
Well, I think we need to hurry up and get some legal counsel on our side. And I think that we might have to actually hire an attorney here locally that's respected, a respected firm that's not already, you know, representing one of these utilities. And they will help us find the right people so that we can dig into this whole process when it actually began. I'd like to know when this whole thing actually began, because it's moving so quickly that a lot of us feel like it's pulled out of the train station and we're just trying to catch up on the thing. And if we keep having council sunshine meetings talking about it, we're not gaining any ground. So I would like to see our council president empowered to, with the suggestion of some of our capable leaders on the council and attorneys in rules committee, perhaps suggest some law firms that he might call. But we need to jump on it and start getting some answers, because I was amazed when I saw that they'd already pared it down from 16 to 9. How do you do on something this huge, of this magnitude? I mean, unless there was just some real dogs in that hunt that we know were no good, how do you pare down to from 16 to 9 in so few a day? The whole thing is moving very, very quickly, and so we need to move quickly, or we need to do something that stops the process until we're in place with the talent we need and the qualified people we need to help us.
It's 549-2937 to join us. Some of the contenders vying to buy JEA are big names: Duke Energy, the parent company of Florida Power and Light; Emera, they're based in Nova Scotia, they own Tampa Electric and Peoples Gas, and some others. And so the city council, some members of the city council, which is a 19-member body, are seemingly standing in opposition to this rush to sell JEA. It is such a big decision, such a big vote. It would be a legacy vote for all of you.
Yes.
And so how do you see the council vetting this process with the counsel of an attorney, given that the council does have the power to stop this process and also to kick it to the public via referendum?
Well, if it gets, let's say it's approved by the JEA, they finally decide on somebody, comes to the city council, you know, we have to determine whether it's referendum worthy, okay? And so there's some big questions on both sides, the electric and the water. Council member Randy DeFore made a presentation in about 2 minutes of the great risk of selling our water supply. And boy, that caught a lot of people's attention. It did mine. I have real concerns with selling our electric side. And, you know, the people that want to sell will say, oh, it's impossible because we got charter changes to make and state constitutional changes to make. Well, right now we've got a mayor who's got just about as good a reach into the Florida legislature as anybody. He's the only mayor that's changed the way that a sales tax can be used, which is generally only for capital outlay and capital improvements, to use it to pay off a pension debt. So we have a mayor that is very strong in Tallahassee. So I don't think constitutional changes are out of bounds for us to try to make. And I'm going to tell you, I talked to some other public utilities. They're working around it. They're finding new markets. They have no intent on selling. And matter of fact, the trend in this country, I have found, is that municipalities are buying private utilities because they want local control, because local control is priceless. After a storm, local control is priceless.
The notion of selling all or parts of JEA remains unpopular with Duval County voters. That said, there's a narrative that's coalesced that the majority of the city council in the end will probably go along with what the mayor's office wants to do, which is sell off this utility. Well, feedback are you getting from constituents? What kind of feedback are your fellow council members getting from constituents about this?
Well, the feedback I get from my constituents is they love the JEA. They don't want to sell it. They're not always 100% happy, but they like the idea of local control. They like the idea that after the storm, we don't sub out to all these different utility companies to come in and do our repairs. It's locally done. We may have to sub out some, but not much. But the council can't do this. The only thing the council can do, if more than 10% is put up for sale, is we can vote to put it on the ballot or not. And then the people make the final decision.
But the council could vote not to put it on the ballot at all, and then it would just be a done deal, right?
That's correct. And that depends on whether, it goes back to what I said, is it referendum worthy? I opposed the sale of JEA, and generally for a council person, it's best to hold your cards kind of close to your vest sometimes and not let on how you feel, but I can't help it on this one. I have felt strongly about this for a long time, particularly after storms, because I'm out there the day after the storm. I see the linemen. I see the JEA. If I need them to peel off a job and help someone who's elderly, a wire is loose where there's children, bang, they'll come. And I've read too many headlines of non-responsiveness from private utility companies in emergency situations with seniors and so forth. So I just think that the JEA is I don't think it's in great shape. It's in great financial shape. The council auditors are doubling down to make sure of that. Operationally, it's in great shape. I don't see any reason to sell it. I think down the road, if we don't make some changes and find some new markets, it could decrease our sales. But let's face it, it's only getting hotter in Jacksonville. More cars are going to become electric, so they're going to need more electric. And, oh, by the way, if we had passed a half-cent sales tax and the sales tax had been successful and we could bring our schools into the 21st century, then that's a chance, a pretty good chance that all those people moved in St. Johns County, a lot of them would stay in Duval County, which would be more customers for the Jacksonville Electric Authority.
We'll go to your calls for City Councilman Matt Carlucci in a moment. The number to join us is 549-2937. Now, you asked to come today to talk about something else, a bill that would replenish a trust fund for downtown historic preservation.
Yes. There's been a Jacksonville Historic Building Trust Fund since 2001. We introduced it. I had put together a task force that Jim Overton chaired. And we have some great talent on that. I'm afraid I'm going to miss some people, but I'll just say Jim Overton chaired it. Suzanne Jenkins, I think, was over the incentive committee, if I'm not mistaken. Elaine Brown weighed in on it, and there were some other
members
of the council. Did a great job, came up with the idea of a downtown historic trust fund. John Delaney liked the idea. We furnished it with ample dollars. And I got to tell you, you know, people say, oh, you put money downtown. Well, every project that this has funded has been a success. 11 East Forsyth, the Carling, the Chop House. There's a warehouse, an old warehouse of dry goods on Bay Street that's doing well. I mean, the list can go on of projects that this trust fund has helped. But it's almost out of money. And so I want to put at least $1,550,000 in there, which would at least cover two projects, one for the Masonic Lodge, the Historic Masonic Lodge, and the other for the Ambassador Hotel, which would bring more people living downtown, which is what we all want.
Okay. On this effort that you're spearheading, your position on JEA, and also your support of the half-cent sales tax for school repair, you are at odds with the priorities of Mayor Curry's administration. How do you plan to navigate that, given that this mayor and his chief of staff are known to vocally express their position to your colleagues on the city council? You're in a minority on the city council on all of these important issues.
Well, all I can do is do what I think and what I know is right and what I know is tried and true. I mean, this is not my first rodeo. This is my fourth term. I know the things that I'm doing, the things that I'm suggesting. I know they work, and they have worked before. And I don't mind change. Lord knows in my business we have changed. But right now this trust fund has very little money in it. And I can tell you from a business point of view, if you don't have product on the shelf, and in this case money in the fund, that doesn't send out a strong signal to potential developers or to developers that have commitments and they're in the middle of a project.
So it's interesting to note, too, with this fund, you were told during a visit to Charlotte, North Carolina, that the head of their downtown development authority said they wish they had the things that we have here in Jacksonville, the downtown river, downtown retail space, and also a big stock of historic buildings.
Correct.
And so you see that as an underutilized asset.
Well, I found it as a great observation. And actually, I made this trip back in around 2000. And it's what helped me form the Historic Trust Task Force. And so I went to Charlotte. And, of course, they have done so great. I mean, their downtown is like a cash cow. I mean, it just pumps so much money out into the suburbs beyond downtown. But they said, I said, what do you guys see in Jacksonville? And they said, well, you got three things we wish we had. The St. Johns River, you've got more retail space, and that's because we did an overlay. That task force did an overlay of CG so that we could have a coffee shop on almost any corner, because some corners were zone CO, commercial office, and you can't put anything retail there. And then they said, boy, we wish we had your stock of historic buildings. We just tore down too many. We wish we had as many as you do. And we'd like to tell you that it would be good for y'all to capitalize on the reuse of those buildings. And so I took all that back, put the task force together. It was an interesting visit, to say the least.
Hmm. Lots of calls, meanwhile, for City Councilman Matt Carlucci. As you pointed out, this is your fourth term on the city council, a voice of independence on the council when it comes to the various priorities of Mayor Curry's administration. So what are your questions, whether it's JEA, downtown historic preservation, or something else? He represents the whole...
All 863
the whole city,
four
so
square miles.
It's time. At-large council reps represent everyone. So wherever you are in Duval, it's time to connect. 549-2937. Rick is in St. Augustine, which doesn't fall under this purview. But go ahead, Rick.
Yes. Good morning, Miss. My question is, in short, what would be the pros and cons of the citizens of Jacksonville if you sell JEA? How would that help, especially when it comes to our bill? That would be my question.
Sure. Thank you, Rick. And that's what most folks want to know. What are the pros and cons of selling, and how will we as customers be affected?
Okay. Well, I'm going to be as honest a broker as I can be here. If we were to sell, if the people voted to sell the JEA, there'd be a minimum amount of $3 billion net that would have to come to the city that we could use to pay off debt, mm-hmm. we could use to make improvements to certain parts of town, and so on and so forth. Part of that promise, part of the sales conditions, would be no rate increases for 3 years.
But after that, you don't know.
Yeah. That people would not lose their jobs for 3 years. So it's kind of a...
People that work for the utility.
Yeah. So after 3 years, you know, who knows what would happen. But my concern is we're going to sell this utility, and that $3 million, it'll be gone at some point.
$3 billion.
$3 billion or more. Yeah, $3
billion. Yeah.
Million, billion, whatever.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, it'll be gone. But once you lose local control of the JEA, it's gone forever.
JEA also contributes a big chunk of money every year to the city's general fund.
They do.
And so you have to weigh the value of that as opposed to a one-time big cash infusion. There's also been talk of customers out there getting rebates, getting an actual check with the sale of this utility. How do you see that?
Well, I tell you what the people who I talk with say. They say they don't want a rebate to sell the JEA. They don't need a rebate. And I'm talking, a lot of my customers come in my office, and a lot of them, you know, are not of a lot of means. They come in, they pay cash, they're on fixed incomes, and so on and so forth. Well, they'll ask me what I think about that. I said, well, tell me what you think about it. He says, I don't want to get rid of JEA, and I don't need a rebate in order to make me vote one way or the other. That's not going to buy my vote. I hear that over and over and over again.
Certainly the majority of the public has weighed in on that side, but giving voice to the other argument, what about the benefit of taking in $3 billion or more dollars with this sale, making the city essentially debt-free, which is what the mayor is arguing would happen?
I don't think it would make the city debt-free because we would still have the unfunded liability that the half-cent sales tax has to pay off. But it would pay off a lot of debt.
And you've called for paying that off if JEA sold. $338 million in unfunded pension liability.
Well, there's a portion I have called for paying that off, but not the entire unfunded liability. So that would still be out there. But it would pay off a lot of debt. Let's put that as a fact. It would pay off a lot of debt. Okay. I liken it to this. I've got a big IRA maybe. And I decide at age 47, you know what? I got so much money in my IRA. I'm just going to cash it in, and I'm going to use it for this, use it for that, put some money in savings. But then when I'm 70, 65, 70 years old, my IRA is not there producing cash income, an income stream to me. And the JEA, I believe, will always be an income stream to Jacksonville, and that's something we shouldn't give up.
Okay, we are getting lots of calls, emails, and tweets about this. Here is one from Stephen. Let's be real. The decision has been narrowed to one, and it's already been made, just like the JEA CEO search. What's the public to do when they won't be allowed to vote on the sale? Shaking my head. Another tweet. The city council needs to grow a backbone and tell the mayor and JEA to cease all actions towards a sale. The council sets policy around a sale, not the mayor's office. Tracy tweets the show, it looks like the city council voted against the half-cent sales tax to keep the conversation about the JEA sale going.
See, these are all the perceptions, and it's all due to, I think, the cone of silence, the kind of the secrecy around the bidding, which some of that is necessary, I get that. But, you know, the process is going, and the JEA can run that process. When it falls in the council's lap, and even before, you know, we need to get some answers on what's going on, which would prove invaluable to us.
Thomas is on the west side. Thomas, go ahead.
Good morning to y'all. I don't care if there's one or if there's 16 or nine, the numbers are irrelevant. What I want to say is I am opposed to the sale under any conditions whatsoever. He's right in what he says about the storms. JA provides us with a lot of resilience. It not only provides us with resilience, it provides others with resilience. We send JEA crews to other areas that are hit by hurricanes. And beyond that, I really, really resent that the JEA is using the money they collect from us to try and influence us on these votes, especially when they start out deceptively with the statement that the JEA is in a death spiral, changing gears for a second. You know, I applaud him for his work to preserve older buildings. The thing to remember about older buildings is most older buildings were built by tradesmen. Most modern buildings are built by laborers, and that makes a world of difference.
Great point.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. John is in San Marco. Hello, John. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you very much for your help. Sir, I appreciate your time. I've got two ideas. One is, I saw a video that was put out called Addiction, and one of the council people were there, and the audience asked, and he said it would be shown to the council, and I'd encourage you to make it public. But then secondly, the Human Rights Commission has a new leadership, and I would encourage you to take that opportunity to promote human rights and human life in Jacksonville.
Sure. What's your position on the other stuff we're talking about today, John? Where do you stand?
Is there one other city that's ever sold such a commodity, and what happened?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's talk about that. Do we have other examples to look at?
There are other cities, and that's where I got the line, once you lose your public utility, you never get it back, or if you do, it's very expensive to get it back. So other cities have sold to private utilities, and now they're trying to buy them back.
Okay. Lots of comments on our Facebook page.
And it's not easy.
Rhoda writes, what is the point of even asking about this? No one is listening to the citizens who are most affected by the sale of JEA. Here is Laura writing. Hang on one second.
Okay.
Let me just get a few more of these to you.
Go ahead.
Laura says, glad to hear the positive answers from the councilman on JEA. I hope his influence will stop the mayor's race to sell our utility company. Mike writes on Facebook, who is willing and able to run a recall petition drive? And Jim says, after a storm, local control is priceless. Quoting you, he says, this is valuable leadership in this period of misleadership. Okay. Several listeners through the last few months have said, we need to begin a recall petition drive because they're so outraged about what's happening with this, the sales tax controversy and other things. It's a very high bar. I just want folks to know, to even get that before the voters, it's very difficult. And given that we had very low turnout in the last municipal election, it doesn't seem very realistic. But what are your reactions to all of these comments?
First of all, the first comment that was made, I want people to know that are out there. I mean, I'm on the council floor and I'm amongst my colleagues, and we don't always see eyeball to eyeball. But I can tell you that the people are listening. The council is listening to the people on the JEA, and that's why we're trying to get a law firm independent legal advice that can help us. There's a lot of questions that we have. And if we had some expert legal advice, it would help us to get those answers. Because, you know, while we're dealing with the JEA, we're also dealing with a lot of other issues. And so we need some help, and we need it quickly. And that's why today at Rules Committee, you know, I think maybe we have a chance to push that along. Depends on what the rest of the committee does. But the council is listening to the people. I just want people to know that is happening. We are listening to the people, and as
if the council were to vote to approve this sale or vote not to even have the referendum, how much blowback do you think there would be from the public?
Well, I have two trains of thought on that. If what is proposed, I just don't think is, and I'm not sure exactly what that would look like, but if I don't think it's worthy to put on the ballot, then I may not vote to put it on the ballot. If I you know, and keeping a hat of fairness on, you know, if I think, okay, well, this is a fair referendum, then it really, there's the other part of me that says, it might be best to let the people vote, because I think, I don't believe the people will vote to sell, privatize, recapitalize, whatever you want to call it, the JEA, and then it squashes that issue forever, and then the JEA gets back on track of doing what other public utilities are doing, and that's finding other markets and making themselves ready for the future. They're in good shape now. They've got the assets to invest to make themselves a viable utility in the future.
Here's an email from former city councilwoman Suzanne Jenkins. She writes, "My good friend and former council member Warren Alvarez always would say, with issues like these, you don't eat your seed corn. I believe it sure applies on this issue," meaning selling JEA, in her words, would amount to eating your seed corn. Okay, let's go to Dale on the south side. Hi, Dale. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd just like to say that, you know, this whole thing with JEA has been, we've been being deceived from the very beginning. With the, as the other tweeter spoke, the death spiral and all of that, you know, the utility was solid. The fact of the matter is that you have a few people down in City Hall who want to have things their way. From what my understanding is, this is still America. This utility is owned by the taxpayers of Duval County, not by Lenny Curry and his cronies. As far as the city council is concerned, you know, you are elected, and you work for the people of Duval County, not for Lenny Curry.
Yes, sir.
So I'm not understanding the concept of, you know, when the mass majority of the people are saying, okay, well, give us a vote and we'll make that decision, and then it'll be, you know, it'll be definitely decided one way or the other. You know, these underhanded tactics, you know, when I look at Lenny Curry on TV, I see John Gotti or anybody else who has the map of Sicily on their face. And I'll tell you why I say that. When you lie to the public, when you deceive the public, and then you use public funds, that makes you a crook. Bottom line. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay, Dale, just want to make clear, we do not endorse those comments. We get all kinds of opinions on the phone lines. That said, you know, a councilman, a recent story in the Florida Times Union showed that while JEA is now saying that rates have spiked some 70% over the last decade or so, thus justifying the need to sell, and a TU analysis showed that that's not true, that rates have essentially stayed constant. And so this kind of stuff does lead to the perception, at least among some members of the public, that they're being spun.
Well, that's why we need some additional help. We're getting a lot of information from everywhere, the administration, the JEA, but the newspaper's done a great job of digging in on this and finding facts. But we need some independent help on the city council to get to the bottom of some of these statements. We do have the city council auditor, and they are the city taxpayers' watchdog, and they are doing an analysis, which they should be through with in hopefully a week, and they will give us a clear picture of the financial stability of the JEA, and I think you'll find that it'll be strong.
Let's take one more call on this, and then we'll wrap things up with your other issue about historic preservation.
Thank you.
Hilda is on the west side. Go ahead, Hilda.
Hi. My concern about this is it's all been done behind closed doors, and the citizens of Duval County do not have a say in it. It feels like, you know, they don't care what we think. I'm totally opposed to the sale of the JEA, and I think they're going to try to put it on the ballot, not during when you're voting for president, but also when, you know, at a different time frame when there's not going to be a great voter turnout. And I'm really upset, and I feel like the other person that texted or emailed about recalling Curry, I feel like the citizens of Duval County are being run over. And as far as the historic buildings, I'm exactly with Matt Carlucci. They've built those buildings, and they're very sturdy. And I think to take that all away and take away the history is a very poor idea. I didn't like it when they imploded the Coliseum because it was an unusual building. And when I, you know, went out of town and came back, I knew Jacksonville by looking and seeing that white dome. And I think the Guard Armory, I mean, the Duval Armory, that one is in pretty good condition. I bought a book at Barnes & Noble's listing all the abandoned buildings. And why don't they try to do something for the vets using the Duval Guard Armor? I mean, the Duval Armory.
Yeah.
And that book is a very interesting book.
Oh,
but I'm
okay,
concerned.
Hilda. Yeah, you're concerned about the election as well, the referendum, you mean? Let me get back to let me respond, have you respond to both of those. And by the way, here's an email from Robert. Not only should the Downtown Historic Preservation Trust Fund be replenished, it should be expanded. Our history is finite and disappearing by way of the bulldozer. Great cities keep their unique character. Replenish the trust fund. So where does that measure go from here?
Well, let me go back to Hilda and tell her, God bless you. Thank you for your comments on the Historic Trust Fund. As a councilman, I have to base everything that comes in front of me based on merit, and so I try to stay away from the, for lack of a better word, conspiracies and so forth. I know how people feel about that, and a lot of people might feel different. I don't know. I'm just saying, but this is what I hear. I have to take a look at everything that's in front of me and weigh the merits and the transparency of what put that in front of me together. And transparency is a very important thing, and which is why we could use some additional help. To the last gentleman, so thanks, Hilda. What was the last gentleman's name?
Robert.
And he said...
he wants you to replenish that trust fund.
Oh, we have this Thursday... Council President, former Council President Aaron Bowman, put together something that I think has been a great idea, and that is a 5-year strategic plan. And in that 5-year strategic plan, there's a 1-year strategic plan, 3-year, and 5-year. And we're all, the council members are supposed to put in what we think on that. And so my 1-year strategic plan is to replenish more than just $1.5 million into this trust fund. I'm trying to prime it right now, but I'd like to see us get $10 million into that. I don't think Mr. Haskell would mind me saying this. I had a conversation with Preston Haskell, and he said there should be at least $10 million in that historic trust fund. He's been a great mentor to me. I love that man. I love his family, and he and we had a great conversation. And I'll tell you one other thing that I have, and we'll talk about this maybe another time. But my 5-year strategic plan is to have a special committee formed on resiliency and the overall health of the St. Johns River, its tributaries, riparian lands, as well as our coastal waters. That is the big issue of our age, of our generation.
Absolutely.
That's the real legend. That's the real legacy issue right there, is resiliency because...
And climate change.
That's right.
Then, yes, certainly we will have you back to discuss that because that's something we cover regularly on this program. And also, let me make a shameless plug for our digital magazine that covers those issues. It's adaptflorida.org. Visit that website to learn more at adaptflorida.org.
And doesn't the Jackson Magazine?
They do, yes.
And they have a good article on my historic trust fund. It's thejacksonmag.com.
That's right. And they are actually our digital partner. So thanks for that. And thank you for appearing, Jacksonville City Councilman at Large, Matt Carlucci. Thank you.
Happy to be here. Great. Thanks.
In a moment, author Tim Gilmore. Stay with us.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Algae in a pond may look flimsy, but scientists are using algae to develop industrial strength material.
That is as hard as steel, but only at a fraction of the weight.
That's Thomas Brook of the Technical University of Munich, Germany. His team developed a process that uses algae oil to create carbon fibers. They're strong, lightweight materials that can be used in cars, airplanes, and buildings. Making these carbon fibers uses far less energy and produces far less carbon pollution than making concrete or steel. But that's not its only climate benefit. Algae absorb CO2 as they grow. So when algae oil is used as a raw material for carbon fibers, the CO2 gets locked inside. Years later, when those carbon fibers need to be disposed of, they can be ground up and permanently stored underground.
So you have this very new advanced material where you can actually store atmospheric carbon indefinitely.
Brooke says scaling up will require big investments in algae cultivation. But once that's in place, this new technology could create strong industrial materials that also benefit the climate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Her name was Anna Louise Fletcher, a Jacksonville spiritualist married to a powerful politician. She was famed for hosting seances. Fletcher even argued the cause of her movement against Harry Houdini in a speech before Congress. You haven't heard about Anna Louise Fletcher, but you need to, because Jacksonville author Tim Gilmore is launching a new book this week telling the tale of a fascinating female figure from this area's past. He joins us now with more about channeling Anna Fletcher. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Great to be have you here. I hadn't heard of Anna Fletcher. Right. Tell me about her. Who was she?
Yeah, well, you know, I think if you've been in the Jacksonville area for a while, you've heard of Duncan Fletcher because we've got schools named after him, but probably not too many of us know much about him either. Anna Fletcher, I think, is a lot more interesting than Duncan Fletcher. She was his wife. He was senator from Florida for 27 years, longer than any other Florida senator, and he had been mayor twice and some other prestigious things as well. Anna Fletcher, you know, the time period that she was in, she was constantly kind of straining against the proprieties and figuring out exactly what a woman's role as a politician's wife should be.
And this was in the 1800s.
Yeah, late 1800s and early 1900s. In fact, you know, the best example that I can think of how she was constantly trying to be politic, if not political, was we're coming up to the 100th anniversary of women's right to vote next year. And in 1920, right before the 19th Amendment was passed, reporters asked her how she felt about women's suffrage. She was at the time the president of something called the Congressional Club in Washington, D.C., which was basically the club of the wives of U.S. congressmen. And she seemed to hint in a number of ways that she thought women should be able to vote, but she would not say, because she said there were plenty of wives in the Congressional Club who did not agree with that stance.
And so she was ahead of her time.
She was ahead of her time, but she was constantly also trying to figure out, you know, the proprieties.
And she hosted seances.
She did, as a matter of fact, yeah. She was, before Duncan was elected to the Senate, she was the president of the Jacksonville Woman's Club, and they had a number of different programs, including some programs that had to do with spiritualist matters. But the older she got, the more upfront and outspoken she was. And there were newspaper stories about seances that she held in her Washington, D.C. home.
So a fascinating figure, and you are so skilled at ferreting out these amazing stories from this region's past and writing a really compelling narrative about them. Now, you wrote this book as you were losing your dad to congestive heart failure.
Yeah.
and you see some parallels in your own life story and hers. Is that right?
In a sense, yeah. One thing that has become really kind of fascinating to me the older I get is how we always have this kind of need for our parents, you know. My mother died when I was 12. My father died this last August, and you couldn't ask more from life than 95 years. That's how old he was. But, you know, Anna is constantly trying to get in touch with her mother's spirit, and she...
Oh, hence the seances.
Yeah.
Okay.
The seances also, she tried to get in touch with past pets and all sorts of things. She wrote a couple of books about spiritualism, and she dedicated those books to people who imagined that they had lost, but according to her thinking, had not.
Fascinating. Now, why write about this particular person? What drew you to her?
Well, in the first place, I was writing about, I think it was 2 years ago, I wrote a story for my website, Jack Psychogeo. I'm getting up to close to the 500th story of places around town.
And that's not surprising, because I always joke that every few weeks or so, a new book falls out of your briefcase. Constantly are turning out new material.
You dig up one story and you find that the roots are connected to lots of other stories. And so I was writing a story about the house that she had built for herself when she moved back to Jacksonville from D.C. It's on Riverside Avenue. Hugo's Interiors is there now. And so, just digging a little bit, one of the first things I see is that she argued against Harry Houdini before Congress. Houdini was on this anti-spiritualist campaign. He wanted to expose them all as frauds. And she really talked down to him in front of Congress. She kept referring to him as our little friend.
Fascinating. This is so great, because there are so many amazing figures from this area's past that you illuminate and bring to the public. So if this interests you, you need to come out and meet Tim, because he's launching his newest book, Channeling Anna Fletcher, this Saturday night, 6:30 p.m. at the Karpeles Manuscript Library Museum in Springfield, which is another incredible place resource to visit. It's right there off Clutho Park in Springfield. Come on out, meet Tim, get a copy of the book, and have a discussion about the history of this area through the story of Anna Fletcher. Always so fascinating to have you on the show.
Well,
it's just incredible how many books you do and how good they all are. I'm really inspired by your prolific output and the talent you have. And check out Tim's website too,
Psychogeo.
Psychogeo.com.
And also, if I may just real quickly, I'd like to say I don't organize it anymore, but by Jack 6 is coming up.
The Literary Festival.
November, right? Mm-hmm. And shout out to Darlene Kuhn, my colleague at FSCJ, who is organizing that now.
Yeah, that's coming up as well. Again, Saturday night, Karpeles Museum, 6:30 p.m. It's Channeling Anna Fletcher, a talk and book launch by Tim Gilmore. Thanks, Tim. In a moment, an icon of the nation's oldest city marks a milestone. The Beacon of St. Augustine, the lighthouse. That's next.
CNS Healthcare is seeking people who are experiencing memory loss to take part in a research study. Together, let's tackle memory loss and Alzheimer's disease. Learn more. CNS Healthcare at 904-281-5757. At Jack's Federal Credit Union, anyone in Northeast Florida is eligible to open accounts and apply for loans over the phone at 475-8000, online at jacksfcu.org, or at any of their 9 local branches.
I'm Courtney Lewis, music director of the Jacksonville Symphony. Brahms' Piano Concerto No. 2 possesses an overwhelming depth of melody. You'll hear it performed by the symphony and piano virtuoso Natasha Peremski, whom the London Classical Source calls fiery and widely dynamic. Piano virtuoso Natasha Peremski joins the symphony for Brahms' wonderfully melodic Piano Concerto No. 2, October 25th and 26th.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Ronan Farrow, his investigation into Harvey Weinstein's predatory behavior, published in The New Yorker, won a Pulitzer Prize. In his new book, Farrow reports on how Weinstein and Farrow's former employer, NBC, tried to prevent Farrow from publishing or broadcasting the story. Farrow also reports a new allegation against Matt Lauer. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Former Ohio Governor John Kasich has a message for his fellow Republicans in Congress during the impeachment process. Look in the mirror and consider how you want to be remembered.
There's nothing wrong with telling the truth and sharing your real feelings.
John Kasich shares his remedy for our divided times next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the St. Augustine Lighthouse and Maritime Museum is celebrating its 145th anniversary this month. If you live in St. John's County, you can get free admission today. Renee Unsworth is with the Lighthouse and Museum, and she's on the line now from St. Augustine. Renee, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Of course, the Lighthouse is such a treasure in St. Augustine, the oldest brick structure in the city, I'm being told, listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Tell us about the big day. You're celebrating the anniversary today. Tell us about it.
We are. We invite everyone to celebrate with us all year, of course. And today we have some special things going on. We have the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary. Tonight we have a member event. We have over 8,000 members of the Lighthouse that help us keep the light shining. So we'll be celebrating with cake tonight, and we'll be honoring Kenneth Smith, who's an architect out of Jacksonville, actually, and he has helped with the ongoing restoration of the St. Augustine Lighthouse.
Okay, take us back to when this lighthouse was constructed. 1874, correct?
Correct.
After the ending of the Civil War. Tell us about the early days of the lighthouse.
That's right. Well, this is, of course, the second tower, the second St. Augustine Lighthouse. The first one was built in the 1700s down by the water, and the U.S. government knew it was going to eventually fall into the ocean, so they decided to build this tower. It began construction in 1871, and it took 3 years. So it was finally completed in October 1874, and it was first lit by the First Order Fresnel lens, which is the original lens from Paris, France, that was installed in 1874, and they lit it on October 15th, 1874. So 145 years later, here it is.
You know, I've been several times, Renee, and it is so worth the trip to climb to the top of the lighthouse, look out over the ocean, and look out over the city of St. Augustine, and also visit the museum. You're inviting people to come today and learn a little bit more at the museum location as well, right?
That's right. We are more than a lighthouse. Of course, you can climb and see those amazing views of St. Augustine that you talked about. But we also have multiple buildings on site that house different exhibits. Some of them have to do with shipwrecks. We have artifacts from shipwrecks that were found by our archaeologists in St. Augustine waters. We also have the history of our lighthouse keepers. We have a shrimping history exhibit. So much to do and see. Lots of hands-on activities for children. And, of course, we have some beautiful nature trails as well.
Okay. Now, if folks live in St. John's County, they're going to get free admission today. Can you tell us what they need to know?
That's right. You can just say the code JSL, and JSL stands for our Junior Service League of St. Augustine. They are the group that helped us save the lighthouse. First, they started with the renovation of the Keeper's House in the 1980s. Then they asked the Coast Guard for the lighthouse. So all of this is saved by the Junior Service League, and if you are a resident, you can come on over today and use the code JSL. Of course, we have discounts for everyone, so just ask about a special discount today and come on over and climb the lighthouse and view the 145 years plus of history.
Wow. It's really exciting to hear about this. And, you know, Renee, I have climbed those steps a few times. But you need to be ready for a little bit of a climb, but it's good exercise.
And it is good exercise.
And it is well worth the effort to get to the top of that lighthouse, which is one of the most beautifully preserved lighthouses on the Eastern Seaboard. It's the 145th celebration event today for the St. Augustine Lighthouse and Museum. If you live in St. John's County, you get free admission today if you say the code JSL as you go in there. Check out the museum too. Get up and enjoy that beautiful view. Renee Unsworth on the line for us from the Lighthouse and Museum in St. Augustine. Thanks so much, Renee, for joining us, and have fun.
Thank you, Melissa. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Well, that is our show. Thanks for listening, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum directs this show. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is digital editor. If you have questions or comments, we always value your feedback. Keep those emails coming. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. On tomorrow's show, we're going to have a closer look at North Florida Land Trust. That's tomorrow. Now, a word about tonight. We will not air our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Instead, we will be carrying on the radio the CNN New York Times Democratic presidential debate. Take a listen. If you can't get to a television, you can hear it on the radio. And we'll be back at 9 a.m. in the morning tomorrow. Have a wonderful day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.